Welcome back to another episode of The Sweet Spot, brought to you by The Racing Post in association with SBK. It is Majors Week. The US Open is upon us, and a red hot tipster is with us as well. Steve Palmer, take a bow. My man, 69-1 winner last week. I hope you're well.
Hiya, Dave. Yeah, I'm well, thanks. How are you? I'm feeling good. It was a grueling week of golf last week. We had lots of highs and lows. The low point was probably Mark Leishman's back-to-back double bogeys on Saturday night. He was leading Live Virginia and then dropped away. But yeah, the high point was definitely the playoff in the Canadian Open, which we'll come to.
Yes, the Fox doing the business. Fox in the box. Right, it's of course US Open week. It's going to be brutal this week. But welcome to the Racing Post YouTube channel. Do like, comment and subscribe. We'll get through all the comments or some of the comments from last week. Lots of happy punters, armed and ready, locked in, ready to go. Any time to celebrate, Steve, or have you just been straight into the US Open?
Well, the Canadian Open finished on Monday morning, Dave. It dragged into Monday morning. So, very exhausting Sunday night. But so, yeah, no time to celebrate, but that's fine. This is exactly what happened before the USPGA, isn't it? We won before the USPGA, and we messed up the USPGA. So we need to be focused on the major, and we are. I promise you we are.
Well, regular viewers will be fully aware of the good week, bad week, good week, bad week. So we're here to buck that trend this week in some style as well. Of course, our friends here at SBK are our sponsors. So do make sure you jump on, open an account with those guys, betsbk.com. Bet 10 and get £40 in free bets. So I'm sure Steve will furnish you with a few selections for the US Open this week. You can have a tenner on and you can have the free bets on as well. Terms and conditions apply there. 18 plus, of course. Right, before we get into the action, let's look back before we look forward. I know you like to go in chronological order, Steve. So, a Scot did the business in the KLM Open. Talk to us.
Yeah, big price Scot. Connor Syme, I think 175-1 was available. Awful conditions for the tournament all week. We mentioned it was going to be windy all week, but there's lots of rain as well. So, a Scotsman handled the rough weather better than anyone, which is understandable, I guess. Yeah, Scotland is a... You know, gets its fair share of bad weather, Dave. I don't know how often you've been to Scotland, but I've been drenched to the pants many a time at an Open Championship in Scotland. So, yeah, the Scottish guys have grown up in rough weather, and Conor Syme looked entirely comfortable in it. You know, neat and tidy player. He's the sort of player that we were looking to back last week. Very accurate driver, handled the conditions better than anyone. And just a fascinating point, Dave. This peer group that he's in, I'm not sure you're aware, like all of his best friends, there's a group of four that have been doing really well on the DP World Tour. You've got Callum Hill won the Joburg Open in March. Richard Mansell won the Singapore Classic. And then Ewan Ferguson nearly won the Sudal Open. So these four just hang around with each other. Yeah, you know, on the DP World Tour, they practice together, they eat together. They're just inspiring each other. It's fascinating to see this little group of friends egging each other on.
Do they share the same coach or management company or anything like that? I love all that. All the when they're all in a team together,
they share everything together. Yeah, it's
everything.
Everything. Yeah. I'm not suggesting any swinging parties or anything. Don't want Richard Mansell on the phone, but yeah, they're just so close. Two of them live in Dubai together. I think Mansell and Ferguson, they're neighbours in Dubai. So I just think it's worth saying because we're always looking for ways of finding the winners on this podcast, and you can get mocked sometimes when you come up with these sort of seemingly spurious reasons. But you know, it's quite clear that these guys are inspiring each other, and Conor Syme came out of nowhere to win last week at a big prize.
And the disgust from punters I saw on social, just on the conditions here. People question, what sort of tournament is this? Like, there was all sorts going on.
Yeah, I mean, we knew it was going to be a rough week. And, two players handled it better than anyone. And Conor Syme, who's blown chances in the past, you know, his reaction to the win. Did you see his lady wife? I don't know whether they're married, actually. His partner came onto the green and his first reaction was a terrible expletive, actually, when he turned around and saw her because...
Surprise, wasn't it? He didn't know she was there, I don't think.
Yeah. And I think surprised that he won so comfortably. He took a 4-shot lead going up the last. And, in the past, Conor Syme has blown chances. But just before his 30th birthday, he turns 30 next month. It was a really controlled performance and he was always in full control. So, big price winner in the KLM Open. Jaden Schaper played well again, Dave. Keep an eye on Jaden Shaper, as we always do on Sweet Spot. He finished third on his own. So I think a maiden DP World title for Jaden Shaper coming soon. And yeah, I know you were disappointed with Rafa Cabrera Bear. That, yeah, we were well in it, well in the hunt for a really juicy place return all week. Yeah, Rafa Cabrera Bear, 250-1 chance. I had him at 175-1, getting 12 places, Dave. Inevitably finishes 13th. He closed with 7 consecutive pars, 2 par fives in that run.
He was on the par train. That's just not acceptable.
He couldn't get off the par train. But yeah, we mustn't grumble about the KLM Open because obviously the day got better as we went on.
Right, we will move on then. Let's go to the livers. Now, before we got into the livers last week, I, as I always do, you know, chucked out the market and said to you, how often do these front players, the fancy players in the live events, win these events? And how foolish of me was that? Neiman, again, 6 wins from his 21 starts on the live tour. Yeah. And he's won 4 of the first 8 events this season. This guy, I'd like to be a pound behind him. Prolific.
Yeah. He won in 50% of the live events this year. He's won an absolute fortune. You know, he's made more money than any other golfer on the planet this year. I mean, they don't play many events, the live guys, but you know, he makes Scotty Scheffler look like a pauper, Dave. You know, Scotty Scheffler is a peasant compared to Wacom Neiman, because you get $4 million for every live win. So you know, you do the math. You get plenty of money for finishing last on the live circuit. So he's absolutely swimming in cash. I mean, I've got a friend who likes to keep all his money under his bed, Dave. He's not a fan of banks. He's not a fan of banks. So he literally stores every available money he has under his bed. And I was wondering this morning, if Wacom Neiman wanted to put all of his 2025 earnings in his bedroom, would he even fit? You know, he's getting past $20 million. Can you fit $20 million into a...
There's that scene, I don't know if you've seen Breaking Bad, where there's like this big cube of cash and there's people just laying on it, just swimming on it. And that I can imagine him doing that. But, you know, we'll get on to him and all sorts. But, you know, it's all well and good. But his performances outside of that, you know, we're still waiting for him, aren't we?
Yeah. We've got a lot to discuss about Wacom Neiman because he's a serious runner this week. He's a 26-year-old at the peak of his powers. Yeah, brilliant on Sundays. You know, it's not just winning these tournaments. He really holds himself together well on Sundays. He was up against some really great players on Sunday. It was a fantastic live leaderboard. Wacom Neiman, big runner in the US Open, we'll discuss later. Bryson DeChambeau, much to discuss about Bryson DeChambeau. He's been my long-term pick for the US Open. You remember our majors acca at the start of the year. Yeah. We had Bryson DeChambeau at 14-1. He's half of that price now, so we have some decisions to make. I'm not going to be pulling the trigger on Bryson DeChambeau, and I will explain why later. And then finally on LIV Golf, before we move on to the tournament we enjoyed most last week, Phil Mickelson, Dave. Did you see Phil Mickelson?
Just an incredible shot.
Yeah, it's quite heartwarming as a man who's got his 47th birthday. I've got my 47th birthday in a couple of weeks, I think it is. I'm trying to block them out of my mind. But, yeah, you sort of feel like your powers are waning and you're not going to be good at anything very soon. And, Phil Mickelson turns 55 next week. 55 on Monday, I think it is, and clearly still in possession of magic hands. He tied fourth last week in Live Virginia, tied with Bryson DeChambeau. And the one shot I'm referring to, the flop shot, a hold flop shot, which he basically had to flop over his head because the angles of the turf. Find it on the YouTube, find it on wherever you find these things. Phil Mickelson has still got the magic hands, and he's going to try and complete the career Grand Slam this week, Dave. The US Open has been this missing piece of the jigsaw for him. He's finished runner-up a million times. Is Phil the Thrill finally going to win the US Open this week at the age of 54? We shall see. Sorry, I had to give him a mention.
Oh, magic. Yeah, the vision, just to see the shot, let alone execute it, was incredible. Steve, before we move on, I've got to ask you. I mean, I saw GMAC was obviously on the leaderboard and he finished second. And to me, some of these live events, there is a bit of randomness to it. It seems like, obviously, we're talking about Neiman winning sort of every other week, but it feels like the sort of event that you could just kind of throw a couple of random darts at big prices and you might get a run for your money because players just pop up out of nowhere. Just all of a sudden, they're on the leaderboard and they're in contention.
Well, that was an astonishing performance from Graham McDowell. That is not the sort of course you'd think he would be competitive on. I think we chanced him last year or the year before in Live Hong Kong or somewhere where precision was really important. But yeah, an astonishing performance from Graham McDowell. Martin Keimer, of course, was floating around the leaderboard last week as well. You never know what's going to pop up on the Live circuit. But yeah, the top four in the betting, as you were alluding to last week, dominate the market and normally win the titles.
Yeah, let us know in the comments below your thoughts on sort of live events, any punting angles you've been getting on. Have you just been back in Neiman every week? I think you'd be going all right if you have done. Anything else to add before we get on to the glory of the Fox?
Let's get on to the fantastic Mr. Fox.
Lovely. Right, Ryan Fox then. It was a playoff with Sam Burns. Before we get on to the winner, you mentioned the jocks all together, friendly, egging each other on. And every time I see Sam Burns mentioned on my screen, Scotty Scheffler's name gets mentioned as many times as Sam Burns' name does. In the frame again, failing to convert.
Well, they had their first babies at a very similar time, didn't they? I mean, Sam Burns, in between setting the clubhouse lead on Sunday and then the playoff, was interviewed carrying his bouncing baby boy, baby Bear, if I remember rightly. His son's called Bear. He is very good friends with Scotty, but obviously doesn't have the same killer instinct as Scotty. There was a 2-hour gap between finishing the round. You know, he played that back nine spectacularly, Sam Burns. He shot 6 under par on the back nine. You know, heartbreaking for Ryan Fox fans, because 18 under par was a really competitive total. But when he came back 2 hours later, he wasn't as sharp. I mean, his driving was good in the playoff, but after his drives, he was very poor, wasn't he? Nearly span a wedge from 75 yards, nearly span it into the water. Dodgy on the greens. He's a fantastic putter normally, but the pressure seemed to get to him on Sunday in the playoff. Thank goodness.
Right, and on the Fox, fantastic Mr. Fox. He was there or thereabouts all week and did get the job done. I think it was the second playoff hole, wasn't it? I text you after the first playoff hole, this is over. You know, Burns had his chance. That dreaded M word, the momentum.
It was an unbelievable playoff. I mean, it was difficult for me because my sister-in-law was staying at our house and she was sleeping in the lounge. So obviously it went on so late. So I had to surrender the big TV in the lounge and then go up to my little TV in my bedroom. And my eyesight is so poor.
Did you not tell her, listen, 69-1, this is, shed or something, mate.
I did not want to start talking about 69s around my sister-in-law, Dave. And I like to welcome visitors to our house.
Yes.
I let her have the big TV. I thought I'll go off to the bedroom and watch it up there. But then I forgot how bad my eyes are. And this TV is right in the corner. So basically, normally I lie in bed and it doesn't really matter what I'm watching. But when you're following little golf balls, and they mean a lot to you, there's a lot of money on the line. I was basically just standing in my bedroom watching the golf from point blank range. And the playoff just went on and on and on, Dave.
Yeah, it was a late one, yeah.
It was brutal, and thank goodness it had a happy ending. Sorry, this podcast has turned into something it really shouldn't. But yeah, Ryan Fox just kept plugging away. He kept plugging away and never gave up. I mean, he was three behind with a handful of holes to go. He birdied 14, he birdied 15. So he got within one with three holes to play.
Was you still believing at that point? Was you still a believer?
I never stopped believing, Dave. I never stopped believing. After he birdied 15, I thought, right, we've got a great chance of a playoff here. But then on 17, did you see the putt on 17, Dave? He had a chance on 17 from about 8 foot. And it was a horrible, horrible pull. And I thought, oh, blimey. So then he's going at the last, needs a birdie to get into the playoff.
What
and had to lay up. Had to lay up because the conditions were so tough. The wind's in the face. And then, the putt on the final, so on the 72nd hole, just fell in on the left side, didn't it? And yeah, that was the highlight of the golf.
It's all between the ears. It's all between the ears, isn't it? When it comes down to it, all these guys can play, but to have dusted himself down off of 17, done that on 18, and then get the job done, incredible.
Yeah, this fourth extra playoff hole in the end, Dave, and the shot he hit on the fourth extra playoff hole, the 3-wood to 7 feet, pile pressure on Sam Burns. Ryan Fox has said it's the best shot of his life in the circumstances. You know, he was over water into the wind. You know, perfectly struck 3-wood, and then Sam Burns under enormous pressure in the back of his head. He's thinking, "Oh, Fox is probably going to make eagle here. I need to get I need to get this in. And he's whacked it past. You know, it's a pretty meek surrender from Sam Burns. Yeah, the best putter on the PGA Tour, statistically, three putted to gift Foxy the title. Great player, Foxy. So plays so fast.
Right, comments. I know you like the comments. Before we get onto the US Open, Ender says, Uniman, Steve, on at 70s. Frankie Burton, great work again, Steve. Go on the Fox in the box. Richard Blackshaw says, brilliant, Steve. So unlucky Bayo didn't get in the frame for a juicy place double. Who else we got here? Mark D, Palmer, you legend. Was worth every bit of stress in the end. There's loads in there. You know, it's fantastic. Mark Lewis, top tipping again, Steve. I backed Foxy on Monday at 66 and snagged a little 80s as well. My first PGA Tour winner, not called Scotty, in 21 months. So well done, sir. Jay Shaw, wow, Steve, great tipping. Fantastic, Mr. Fox. A lot of people kind of were on the roller coaster. There's a lot of mentions of the word stress along the way. So, you know.
Well, if you're gambling responsibly,
do try and enjoy it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we did enjoy it. We did enjoy it. I mean, it's very important now we use this opportunity we've got because, we've all got full betting pots and we've got a major coming up. I'm really keen on making this one count.
Right, let's get into it then, shall we? Should we move on?
Yes, sir.
Right, I am going to start with the word rough here, Steve. It's the US Open. We are at Oakmont Country Club. If you go on any platform of social media, you will probably find a professional golfer simply dropping a ball into the rough and watching it disappear. Bryson DeChambeau did a round on his YouTube channel, which was absolutely brilliant, just highlighting what a lot of players are calling the hardest golf course in the world.
Absolutely. And the rough, you know, is long. You've seen longer rough, but have you ever seen thicker rough? This is, they've cut it in a certain way that it's coarse. It's like, the ball, you're going to have to generate so much clubhead speed to get out of that rough and advance it far. The rough is a huge factor this week. We're at Oakmont Country Club, Pennsylvania, 7,372 yards, par 70, only two par fives. You know, widely regarded as one of the toughest tests in golf, if not the toughest. A long par 70. That rough is so penal. 168 bunkers, firm fairways, lightning fast greens. I thought level par might be the winning score, Dave, when I first started thinking about this tournament. But there's been plenty of rain in the build-up. You know, it's taken some of the sting out of it. The course is playing softer than the USGA would like. So I think the winning score will probably be similar to the one we got in the last US Open at Oakmont. That was in 2016, you might remember. Dustin Johnson won that. 4 under par was the winning score. So I think that the softening of the turf means that 4 under par will probably be around the winning score this time. The greens are notoriously difficult. You know, you talk about the rough, but the greens are just devilish. I mean, if you two putt a green this week, you're making progress up the leaderboard, I'd say. Yeah, you see, I remember the 2016 US Open. There's loads of four putts. You know, yeah, you've got to have such focus. You know, the players that were out of contention in the 2016 US Open just lost focus, and I remember seeing lots of four putts. You know, fast, undulating greens. They got a sub air system under them now, so they're going to be dry greens. Remember at Quail Hollow, it was for the USPJ, it had been raining hard and the rest of the course was sodden, but the greens were firm and fast. That had a sub air system. We got the same deal this week. You're going to get softer fairways, but firm, fast greens, even if it's been raining. I think we're going to get three dry championship days, so it'll dry out over the first 3 days, but we've got thunderstorms on Sunday. So just an extreme all-round test. Field of 156 going to post, and only the top 60 and ties make the cut.
Right, let's put some more meat on the bones then. Last three winning scores here when the US Open was held at Oakmont. 1994, Ernie Els, 4 under par. Angel Cabrera, 2007, 5 over was the winning score. And as you mentioned there, DJ, 4 under. This is the 10th time Oakmont has hosted the US Open. 8 of the 9 winners were or have gone on to be multiple major winners. The last three, of course, DJ, Cabrera and Els, all multiple winners of majors. Takes a good one to win here, right?
It does. And yeah, Angel Cabrera, when he won that one at five over par, he had 18 bogeys on his scorecard for the week. So, yeah, that was playing a bit firmer.
This is what I want, though. I don't want just PlayStation golf, birdie. I want to see pain. I want to see frustration, struggle, stress.
You're going to see that, Dave. You're going to see that. I don't think anyone will get any past four under. I think four under is the absolute limit of where they get to, because it's a point worth making. In 2016, they had graduated rough, you see. So they had certain cuts of rough. So just off the fairway wasn't as bad as further. But now for this one, as soon as you're off the fairway, you're in the horrible stuff. So this could be harder than 2016. Apart from the softened fairways making them wider targets. So you're gonna get what you want, Dave. You're gonna get carnage. I know you like to.
Right, I want to see people suffer. Your uncle Arnold said you can hit 72 greens in the Open at Oakmont and not even come close to winning.
Yeah. Because the greens are just, the hardest greens in golf. I think Rocco Mediate said they're almost impossible. No pressure relief this week, Dave. From tee to green, no pressure relief. You've got to be focused for 72 holes. It's in here. Yeah, this US Open's in here as much as anywhere.
Right, some more. 2016, first hole, tough par 4, averaged 4.45. The 18th, tough par 4, averaged 4.32. Drivable par 4, 17th. I'm thinking we're going to get some drama at the end here. Is that what we're expecting?
Yeah. There's one short par 4 that the big boys can get to. But the two par 5s are both over 600 yards. There's a 289-yard par 3. You'd have your driver out on that one, wouldn't you, Dave? So we got a fascinating weekend. I'm thoroughly looking forward to it. But as ever, it will depend on the success of the tips, whether I enjoy it or not.
It will, and we will get to that. Right, before we do, SBK are boosting some of Steve's selections this week. So our producer, Ben, will chuck up the graphics, tell you what prices they are, but make sure you do jump onto SBK's website, betsbk.com, for those enhanced prices. So, listen, 69 to winner last week. They're taking you on, Steve. Not something I'd be looking to do, but they're taking you on. They're going to boost your selections. How many are in the team?
Five, Dave.
Five. Okay. And Steve Palmer's selection, main tip for this year's US Open is?
Ludwig Aubert. You never turn your back on Ludwig Aubert, Dave, as we discussed last week. He's always close to selection. He was a hero for us in the Genesis Invitational, you'll remember, in February. We've had some concerns since then about inconsistent approach play, but I feel like these worries have lifted. In his last five competitive rounds, those worries have drifted away. Closed with a 66 in the Memorial. Only one player in the field beat him in the final round of the Memorial. He finished 16th in that. Then last week, he was swinging better than he has for ages, Dave. It was so nice to see Ludwig swinging at his best again. He opened with a pair of 68s, then 65-66 over the weekend, finished the Canadian Open in 13th place. He was really unlucky on the 11th hole in round two. He made a 7 on a par 3. Just tugged his approach shot into terrible, terrible rough. The rough in the Canadian Open was pretty bad in places. It took him 4 hacks to get out of that rough. So he made a quadruple bogey 7, but his golf swing generally was in mint condition, awesome driving, solid approach play, an ideal warm-up for a player that I think is going to win multiple major titles. I think this could be the first one. 7 of the last 9 US Open winners had never won a major before. This is an interesting stat, isn't it, David? This has become a major where first-time major winners have been winning. I think Aubert, he's the strongest of the major maidens. And temperament. I've just been bashing my head like this. I'll do some more. Oakmont is about in here. Ludwig Aubert has got the perfect temperament for Oakmont. He's completely unflappable. If you're watching Ludwig Aubert, you have no idea whether he's just made a quadruple bogey 7 or an eagle. Like he has the same manner, calm, often smiling. He's a serene golfer, and I think that's crucial this week at Oakmont. And he's got some course experience, Dave. You might think this is his debut. Obviously, he wasn't around in 2016, but it's not his debut. He played in the 2021 US Amateur Championship. Had a bad first round, had a good second round. He's been back to Oakmont in recent weeks on reconnaissance missions. So, you know, taking it seriously. He knows he's a major winner waiting to happen. He doesn't feel fortunate to be in majors. He expects to be in majors. He expects to win majors quite soon. He finished 12th on his US Open debut last year. Has nearly won the Masters in the last 2 years, lest we forget. You know, he was runner-up on his Masters debut 2 years ago. This year, co-leader with a couple of holes to go. You know, people forget that he triple bogeyed the 72nd hole. You know, he dropped down to seventh. On the form book, it says he was seventh in the Masters. He had a putt for the outright lead on his own on the 16th green. So, you know, he's been in the thick of things in majors, and he will be forevermore.
Yeah, but, and that's that about first time winning majors. He's coupled with what I said a little bit earlier on, that it's an event in which players win and then they go on to win more majors.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that's going to win multiple majors.
Absolutely, yeah. Dustin Johnson won this as his first one at Oakmont in 2016. Brooks Koepka won this as his first one, went on to win five. Yeah, yeah. This can be the springboard to bigger and better things. And yeah, I think Ludwig Aubert potentially wins this week and then, you know, wins several majors.
Can we just get another growl from you, Ludwig Aubert? Because I know he's a player that you love just saying.
Yeah, I do. I remember being on holiday a few weeks back in Gran Canaria and I was playing table tennis with my son. And do you remember, I had lots of arthritis problems that week. And every time I said Ludwig Aubert, it relaxed me. Yeah. And then I had lots of people thinking I had, you know, mental problems or whatever. But yeah, Ludwig Aubert. What a name. What a golfer. I can't wait to be on him for his first major victory.
Okay, right. I was very excited and to get to your selections. It was remiss of me not to just run through a betting show. So we'll give you sort of a rough guide at the top of the market before we get your next best. The Chef, the captain, 3-1. DeChambeau, 15-2. And then big prices. Double figures, John Rahm and McIlroy, according to... Rory is double figure prices here. John Rahm, we'll get on to all of the market leaders, but Ludwig Aubert is next in behind sort of the top four in the market alongside some very talented names. He is your main selection. Who is the next best?
Wacom Neiman, the dominant force on the LIV circuit, as discussed. He won two LIV events last year. He's won four this year. 50% strike rate in LIV tournaments this year. You know, I don't want to get bogged down in golf in politics, Dave. There's been too much of that for many years now. But there's some great players on the LIV circuit. And to have a 50% strike rate this season is incredible. He's playing so well. Always destined to be a superstar, Wacom Neiman. You know, he's a former world number one amateur, Dave. You know, my three main tips for this are former world number one amateurs. So, Brendan Jute's got a very lucrative week ahead selling the merch. Brilliant from a young age, and his maiden PGA Tour title came in close to here in the 2019 Greenbrier. So the Greenbrier was in West Virginia borders Pennsylvania, where we are this week. He won last week in Virginia. He spoke afterwards, actually, about how great it was to have such a short journey from LIV Virginia to the US Open. I think it was fantastic preparation last week. Do you remember going into the USPGA? I said, I'll rule out the LIVers because of their poor preparation. You know, I think one of the commentators got the wrong end of the stick. I remember she was saying that, thanks for pointing out that they're tired. I didn't mean that they were tired. I mean, LIV players don't get tired because they hardly play any events, and the ones they do play are 54 holes. The point I was making was that they were playing different types of courses, you know, gallivanting all over the world, you know, Saudi Arabia, Australia, Hong Kong, Singapore, et cetera, et cetera. Only one of the first seven LIV events this season was in America. So that was the point I was making. But last week, ideal US Open preparation, you know, Robert Trent Jones Jr. Golf, Robert Trent Jones Golf Club, you know, course close to the US Open venue and the same sort of track, you know, long, soft, heavy, rough. So I think the US Open is the major that the LIV players have prepared best for. And, you know, Neiman is the pick of them for me. All round class. You know, his driving is superb. He's weakness free, really. And an Oakmont's going to test every club in your bag. He had his best major finish in the last major, the USPGA. That was his first major top 10. He finished eighth in the USPGA. He's maturing, Dave. 26 years of age. But he was speaking after LIV Virginia, how he's expecting to make lots of bogeys this week. You know, he's aware of the difficulty of the course. He says he's going to stay calm. So I like those comments. You know, there's a calmness about Neiman, and his US Open record, I know his majors record generally is disappointing. Bear in mind, a lot of them when he was really young, he played in a lot of majors when he was really young, but his US Open record as a professional is solid. He's had four US Opens as a professional, finished in the top 50 in all of them. He's made the cut in his last five majors. So yeah, I think maturing, coming of age, ready to contend for a major seriously for the first time.
And the biggest factor as well is the big bank balance swagger that he's going to be coming with.
That's it, Dave. That's it. No, he's never going to have to worry about money. And his game's never been in better shape. Yeah, the time has come. We've been waiting for Wackham Neiman to contend in a major. I'm pretty confident it's going to happen this week.
The wait is over for Wacken. Right, that is the first two. Three more to come. I'm assuming we've got some big prices coming as well. Who's third in?
Third in, Patrick Cartlay, my third former world number one amateur. He was top dog in the amateur rankings for 55 weeks. I think he probably would have won a major by now had he enjoyed an injury-free career. Very easy to forget that he lost two full years early in his career with a back injury. He didn't play at all in 2015, didn't play at all in 2016. Yeah, he was humbled by injury early on in his career. He started winning on the PGA Tour at the end of 2017, FedEx Cup champion in 2021, got up to world number three in 2022, seven-time PGA Tour champion, but he's gone almost 3 years without a win now, Dave. I know a lot of punters have given up on Patrick Cartlay. I certainly haven't given up on Patrick Cartlay. I don't think you can. He's a 33-year-old, such a quality player, such a strong all-rounder, such a perfect US Open golfer, Dave. And his stats this season are generally excellent. Rock solid off the tee, exceptional on approach, third in the greens in regulation stats, Dave. Been some positive signs on the greens lately. He's been trying different putters. He putted well at the Memorial last time out. He's posted three top fives this year. You know, statistically, loads to like about Cartlay. So if you can forgive that long victory drought, Dave, which I can, because I don't think Patrick Cartlay has lost self-belief. I think he still expects to become a major champion. I think you saw in the Ryder Cup last year, if you remember the Ryder Cup last year, Dave, in Italy, basically playing under maximum pressure. I don't see how it's possible to play under more pressure than what Patrick Cartlay faced in Italy there. And he performed. He held key putts at key moments. I still think he's a major winner. He's got the minerals to win a major. So I forgive the long victory drought, and I forgive the miscut at the USPGA. He missed the cut at Quail Hollow. He's never made an impact at Quail Hollow before. I don't think he likes that course. So, bear in mind, these are the positives. Low amateur on his US Open debut in 2011. He's played in nine US Opens, never finished outside the top 50, six top 25s, four top 15s in a row, third last year. It's building. This US Open win is coming. I just think I've always had him down as a potential US Open champion, and I'm really excited about his chances this week. I think the long victory drought can end in a perfect place for a US Open. I have more to say, Dave. I know I'm rambling.
Bring it on. Listen, I know he's not won for a while, but he's not the dreaded F word. He's not flaky for me. You know, if he's in the mix at the death, I think he's not going to wilt. He's going to be strong and trying to win this golf tournament.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he's won the FedEx Cup, and you know that's a tough one to win with that amount of money on the line. And as I say, in the Ryder Cup, he's held himself together. Even in the last President's Cup, he holds some clutch putts. You know, I definitely think Cartlay's still got bottle, and he loves this part of America. This is the point I wanted to make. He's twice won the Memorial, which is over the Pennsylvania border in Ohio. He's twice won the BMW Championship. He won in Maryland in 2021. He won in Delaware in 2022. Both of those states border Pennsylvania. So these are the sort of conditions he thrives in. The last time we were in Pennsylvania, it wasn't that long ago. You remember the Truist Championship, where we had a joyous Truist Championship? I was very close to selecting Patrick Cartlay for the Truist Championship, and he finished fourth because, again, loves this part of the world. That was his best finish of the year in Pennsylvania just a month ago. So I know that venue was much shorter than we've got this week, but it had firm, fast, undulating greens. I think it's noteworthy form. So, yeah, I think Cartlay really fancies himself this week. He knows that people are starting to write him off because of this long victory drought, and I think he's going to remind everyone how good he is.
Okay, well, listen, you can always, if it ever goes a bit west on the golf tippings, Dave. I think you can always go on Mastermind and go with, you know, US geography and former world amateur number one. So I think you could probably reel off the history of the amateur rankings. Could you? So we've gone with three out of five, yeah. Former amateur world number one. Listen, it's a little bit left field, can't lay, but I like it. You've made a good case for him. He's a big price. I'm seeing sort of around about 40 to one. Remember that, you know, SBK are going to be boosting some of Steve's selections. Maybe they will doubt, can't lay, and boost him. You have to jump on the site to find out. Two more to come. Who else you got for us?
I started, so I'll finish. Harris English, double the price of Cantlay. Magnificent US Open record. 9 appearances, has made every cut. 37th at Oakmont in 2016, 4th in 2020, 3rd in 2021, 8th in 2023. Harris English has become a US Open leaderboard mainstay. This year, he's already finished 12th in the Masters, and he tied 2nd in the US PGA. Topped the greens in regulation stats at the US PGA. He was swinging amazingly at the US PGA. Didn't know the usual amount of putts. He's usually a great putter, but he couldn't get him the drop in the US PGA. You know, laser-like irons. He's been contending in all the majors this year, the two majors that we've had. This is a serious US Open title threat, going off at a juicy price. 5-time PGA Tour champion, won the Farmers Insurance Open, a US Open venue in January, Torrey Pines. Driving better than he ever has, I'd say. Nearly always putts well. So English are a must for the staking plan at such a healthy each-way price.
Marvellous. And one more to come. Who's the fifth and final member of the team?
Massive prices. Bigger prices than we got for Rafa Cabrera Bayo last week in the KLM Open. Davis Riley being disrespected in the market yet again. Finished 21st on his Masters debut in April. Finished 2nd alongside English in the USPGA last month. Yet he's going off at, you know, being dismissed again in the market. Bookmakers still haven't comprehended the ability of Davis Riley, in my opinion. Won the Zurich Classic Pairs event alongside Nick Hardy in 2023. He won the Charles Schwab Challenge by 5 shots last season. And from March onwards this year, been swinging with confidence. He's gone back to basics, Dave. He's tried a few different things in his career, but he's gone back to his old technique, the technique which made him an amateur star. He won twice on the Korn Ferry Tour in 2020. Putting really well this year. I think he can handle these Oakmont greens. He's long enough. He's a big hitter. He can handle the length of these soft fairways. I think the Riley A game is good enough to win majors, Dave. I would die on this hill. The Riley A game is good enough to win majors. And if we see the Riley A game this week, then it can make a mockery of these prices.
You love him, don't you? You do love him.
It's just technically such a good-looking golfer, isn't it? You don't need much on, as you always say. You don't need much on at those prices. He really is deep in the betting. So, yeah, I've got three main tips. Harris English is another one that's fairly priced. And then a sort of wild card, if you will, in Davis Riley.
Well, listen, as you say, massive, massive price. So, you know, stranger things have happened. I don't know if you saw, Steve, one of the YouTube commentators wanted more from me. I mean, they don't need anything from me. You've got golf's greatest tipster right in front of you, marking your card. So I'm gonna give you who I'm backing this week.
Ah, right? More from Dave. Yeah, I like it.
I'm going with JT and Morikawa. No, I'm not going with Morikawa. I'm going with Matsuyama. I wanted you to pull a funny face then, because I love Morikawa. So JT and Matsuyama, give us sort of your views on my selections.
I don't think either of them will drive the ball well enough to contend. I'm sorry, Dave. I think Justin Thomas he's got his putting sorted to a degree, but his driving.
Yes, I've gone with putting. So I should have said I've lasered in on putting this week.
Yeah. It's driving. He opened with an 80 in Memorial, didn't he? I think his driving is wild at times, and I don't think you can get away with wild driving at Oakmont. Hideki Matsuyama has driven the ball poorly by his standards this year. I don't want to put you off. But I do want to put you off. But you can laugh your cotton socks off when they're playing a playoff on Sunday.
For my views, it was only because we had someone, I think they were suggesting I did more research. Listen, you don't need to pick my brains.
That's harsh.
We need Steve's brains on the US Open. Right, let's tackle the market leaders then. We'll start with the captain, the chef, the jolly. Top price threes everywhere you look. Now, everything you've said about this golf course, how difficult it is, you know, the temperament needed. We need to steady the ship just like the captain does. We need to roll it nice just like the captain does. I mean, this is a short price, Steve. He's good. He's the best in the world, but this is a short price.
Well, you're struggling to get threes. I mean, yeah, I mean, he's a 5-2 generally. He's too short. He's too short for me because everyone's going to be prone to card busters. We mentioned the difficulty of Oakmont. Yeah, you're going to get some terrible lies this week. Luck can play more of a role this week than at the average course. Scheffler won't like. Yeah, Scheffler can get fiery at times, and I think he might be unsettled by some of the lies he gets this week. He made his major debut in the 2016 US Open at Oakmont, so he's played Oakmont. He was an amateur back then, and he only missed the cut by a shot. So I think you'd say that was a creditable performance. He opened with a 69 and then 78 the next day to miss the cut by a shot. So that was 9 years ago. I think that was a useful sighter. Now he returns as a 28-year-old. Obviously, deserves favouritism and most likely winner by a long way. But, you know, at the price, I just can't play at that price. You know, but these greens are brutal, Dave. These greens can send you crazy. Scottie Scheffler has bad putting rounds. You know, I know he's the best player in the world by a long way, but he has bad putting rounds. Yeah, really bad putting rounds. And he can miss short putts. You know, a lot of these putts this week, Dave, the short putts have loads of break on them. You won't find many courses where you start the ball outside the hole on such short putts. You know, Scheffler misses tiddlers on much easier greens than these. So I could see Scheffler having some really terrible spells on the greens. He has bad spells with the driver, we might add. You know, the start of the final round of the USPGA when he was just hitting everything left. You know, his car will be destroyed if he had a spell like that with the driver this week. It is just purely price. He's going off at Tiger Woods in his pomp prices now, isn't he? And, you know, I'm not ready to take the plunge on Scottie Scheffler at Tiger Woods in his pomp prices. I, you know, Tiger was so much more dependable with the putter, wasn't he? Tiger did hardly ever putted badly. Tiger did actually putt badly in the 2007 US Open Oakmont, I remember. He was very, you know, similar price, yeah, slightly shorter, if I remember rightly, for that
you
one.
You may remember.
Here we go, going back a long way now, aren't we? Yeah, 2007 was our one, I think, and Tiger was the big warm favourite and putted poorly, but Tiger was such a better putter than Scottie Scheffler. So, yeah, I can just see Scottie Scheffler having a nightmare on the greens, and, I've no urge to play at those odds.
Given the nature of this course, and you talk about sort of round wreckers and you can have meltdowns on holes, is there a situation in which one or two rounds in, Scottie Scheffler is 5, 6, 7, 8 shots back and he's maybe becomes a backable price? Is that somewhere where you could be here?
Well, we shall see, Dave. We'll have in running previews on racingpost.com. We'll judge each day as it comes. But, you know, starting off with 72 holes on such a brutal golf course, I'm not playing at 5-2.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, you know, if you think Scheffler, you know, would you want to keep him on side? Maybe keep your powder dry and see what happens. You know, if he has a tricky first round, he might be double that, treble that, quadruple that, and you can maybe back him each way, which is a play I like anyway. Right, Bryson.
Bryson, yeah. I mean, also has got too short in the betting for me. I think the favourite's too short. I think Bryson DeChambeau has become too short. I mean, you know, I've been keeping an eye on him for this. He's been my fancy for this for a long, long time. But I've now got 2.5 concerns, I would say. I generated 2.5 concerns last week. The first concern, the main concern, is these new irons that have gone in the bag. We were speculating last week whether they'd be in the bag for LIV Virginia. He was trying to get them built in time, and they were in the bag for LIV Virginia. But he's not entirely comfortable with them. I thought it was fascinating. Before the final round, so on the eve of the final round of LIV Virginia, Bryson DeChambeau is shaving the bottom of his irons because he wasn't happy with how they were cutting through the turf. He felt they were getting stuck a little bit. So on Saturday night, after the round two of LIV Virginia, he's shaving the bottom of his irons. That just shows a lack of comfort with the new irons. I mean, he's only had one competitive tournament with his irons. He said afterwards there is more optimization to come. This is Bryson speak, more optimization to come. That just means he's not happy with them. So the irons are a big concern. And the second main concern I have is that his driving was poor last week by his standards. His driving was all over the place. And he said afterwards that he feels like the driver has given away. So he said he's been using that driver for 3 months. You know, nobody hits the ball harder than Bryson DeChambeau. So 3 months with a driver, it needs replacing. So much like Rory McIlroy before the USPGA, the driver's got really thin just before the major. He says he's going to put a fresh driver in the bag for the US Open. So we saw what happened to Rory McIlroy when Rory McIlroy's driver was non-conforming just before the USPGA. He had to put a new driver in the bag and drove abysmally. So Bryson DeChambeau's got a fresh driver. Irons he's only had one competitive round with. And then the half a concern is that he's never defended a title. He's never successfully defended a title. He's defending champion this week. So I think when you put those 2.5 concerns into the 7-1 that's available now, it's not a big enough price.
He's very short, very, very short. John Rahm. Now we talk about between the ears. John Rahm, we've come to third in the betting with most layers.
Yeah, I respect his chance. Obviously, a former US Open champion, low amateur at Oakmont in 2016, been in decent nick. But yeah, we're talking about temperament. We're talking about temperament. And, you know, Oakmont is the ultimate test of a player's temperament. You know, he's such a fiery character, isn't he? This is a huge test of patience, resilience, you know, keeping a tidy scorecard. So difficult. John Rahm is a hothead, isn't he? Yeah, he's a hothead. I don't expect you were watching much of Live Virginia last week, but he was effing and jeffing throughout Live Virginia. He hit one drive and went absolutely...
I didn't need to know that was what was going on.
There were F-bombs coming out of John Rahm in Live Virginia. I feel like he comes into majors under such pressure now. He's got a huge chip on his shoulder. Right? He hasn't won a major as a Live player. He knows people say that Live Golf has taken the competitive edge out of John Rahm. He's made him less of a player. I think he probably suspects that himself. So John Rahm coming into majors now with a huge chip on his shoulder, huge amounts of pressure. There were signs in Live Virginia that the fact there's a major looming was sending him a bit loopy. So, technically, this course is great for John Rahm. But I just think his temperament won't hold together. And you saw over the final few holes at Quail Hollow, he had a chance to win his first major as a Live player. Putting the willies up Scotty Scheffler and then just imploded over those last few holes. So, he has got short, hasn't he? He's gone ahead of Rory McIlroy in the betting now, has he?
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
With quite a few of the firms. So we're at Rory, you know. Mm. After he won the Masters, despite what this course is going to look like and records at US Opens, etc., I think you would have struggled to argue that both DeChambeau and Rahm were going to line up shorter than McIlroy, but here we are.
Well, here we are. And, Bryson DeChambeau, I got put off Bryson DeChambeau last week. Rory McIlroy, I'm nowhere near selecting. I think he's a really poor price. I mean, his driving has been X-rated. His driving was X-rated at the Truist Championship, but then it spilled into into the USPGA. I mean, obviously at the Truist, his driver was on its last legs, wasn't it? Yeah, the face was thin. I remember there was a couple of shots at the Truist where he hit a wild drive and then he looked at the driver. Yeah, the driver was clearly close to being non-conforming and obviously it did become non-conforming. And then a new driver goes in the bag at the USPGA. His driving was terrible at the USPGA. He hardly hit a fairway at the USPGA. Then he went into hiding, didn't he? He went into hiding, skipped the Memorial, you know, obviously trying to get these drivers sorted. But then he put a new type of driver in the bag last week, Dave, in the Canadian Open. He's gone back to he's trying the new model, the latest model. So he missed the cut by 12 shots. His driving was even worse in the Canadian Open. He missed the cut by 12 shots. Hardly anyone finished behind him. He's short price favourite for the Canadian Open. Hardly anyone finished behind him. He tried that driver at Bay Hill, I remember. He put that new driver in the bag at Bay Hill, and it was a similar story. So he's had two experiments with that type of driver, and it's not gone well. So I think he's going to give up on that driver for good. Probably go back to the old version, but yeah, huge driver issues. And as you say, Dave, after the Masters, yeah, I fell into this trap of assuming that he was going to be, you know,
I was on the train. He's going to win the lot. He's going to win the lot.
Well, yeah. It's funny, isn't it? I mean, I just thought, you know, the burden of the of the green jacket had been lifted. I just thought it would free him up and he would just, you know, cruise around major venues. But it seems to have gone the other way, and he's been struggling for motivation. He's admitted in interviews that, you know, going on the driving range to practice for 8 hours is not on his agenda now, because he's completed all his dreams. He's great. So he doesn't seem to be in the right headspace at the moment. And yeah, that Canadian Open performance was just horrific, wasn't it?
Well, there's a very famous quote in boxing that, you know, it's very difficult to get up and do the morning runs when you're wearing silk pajamas. You know, once you've climbed to the top of that mountain, who knows? I mean, McEnroe doesn't come across as the sort of player that would kind of just sit back and light a big fat cigar and say, "I've completed it, mate." But we'll see.
Well, you're absolutely right, Dave. You're absolutely right. Yeah, talking of boxing, I remember speaking to Barry Hearn. I was sitting next to Barry Hearn at dinner once, and we were talking about Anthony Joshua. And he said that Anthony Joshua was a really, you know, fearsome fighter, a real, real, real sort of street fighter when he was younger, when he was skint. And then as soon as he got fortunes, millions in the bank, he didn't want to get hit, and he was become less of a threat. So, I think you're right. I think money and success can weaken a man, funnily enough.
Right. Who else? Xander Schauffele, or Schauffele, as you like to call him. What are your thoughts on him?
Get the pronunciation right. Yeah, Xander Schauffele. His driving's been poor this season. Yeah, I mentioned that driving is so important this week. Xander Schauffele's driving has been well below his usual standard. It was dismal at Murfield Village last time out. Didn't drive the ball well there. So, yeah, it's just that club. I don't think Xander will hit enough fairways to compete this week.
Well, I'm going to throw out one more name that I wanted to ask you about. Victor Hovland here. What are your thoughts?
Victor Hovland, blimey, you know, so much going on in that head. I mean, we talk about, Oak once played in the head. I mean, Victor Hovland, is that such a strange season, isn't he? You know, he did just,
you know, but you wouldn't be surprised. If he was contending, you wouldn't be surprised, would you?
No. He's certainly got the tools for Oakmont, but just too muddled. I almost feel like I've taken a year off backing Victor Hovland. I've not backed him this year. I think he needs a year to get all that clutter out of his head, all the swing thoughts. I can't see him holding it together over 72 holes. And your mate Colin Morikawa, I got no interest in him. I was glad when you said you were only joking about that, because I think he made a really poor decision in changing caddies. I think he had a great relationship with that caddy. I think he made a knee-jerk decision to sack him, old JJ Jakovac. I think he feels uncomfortable at majors now, because he's had these spats with the media. I don't know if you've been following him through the year. Like, he said that he doesn't owe the media anything. Basically, all the people in the media tent hate Colin Morikawa. Not going to put any finer point on it. You know, so he walks into a room full of people that hate him in the lead up to the tournament. That's a bit unsettling. And that victory drought, you know, all the media men that hate him are going to keep saying, "How many days is it now since your last one?" Remember when he said it was 500 days since his last one, and he got really spiky about that. So I think there's a lot going on in Colin Morikawa's head. Yes, there's a long, soft course, doesn't hit it far compared to the others. So, very happy with my team. And there's no one that I'm really going to regret if they win, I'd say. I don't think there's anyone I was close to having other than those five. I mean, Bryson DeChambeau.
Too short.
I'm comfortable with leaving him out at 7-1. And I suppose DeChambeau and Rahm will be the two closest. But I just think Rahm's temperament will cost him.
Okay, well, a reminder that our friends at SBK will be boosting some of Steve's selections. So he's given you five. Listen, we'll maybe try and twist their arm and see if they can boost all five. Who knows? We'll see what we can do. But do jump onto their website. A reminder, with it being a major, slightly bigger winnings boost for you as well. So if you are able to find the winner of the US Open, they're going to boost winnings up to 30%. So all the best. Free bets, winnings boosts, price boosts. There's a lot going on. Right, there is a lot going on this week. I've also been asked to ask you, Steve, before we get a roundup of your selections, it's a big weekend in the canine world. And I know you're a massive fan of the Greyhound Derby favourite. It's the final one Saturday night. Bocco's Diamond. You fell in love with him at Shelbourne Park during the Irish Derby. Last year, are you on board the Bocco's train again?
I had him in a couple of multiples, like multi-sport multiples that have already failed, unfortunately. But
with Donald Trump as well, there was all sorts going on.
I'll be cheering him on because I find it really heartwarming. Obviously, he dominated Ireland. He was the greatest greyhound Ireland's ever seen. And then, he wasn't favourite in the anti-post book, was he, when he came over to the English Derby? So they thought he had to settle with the track, I guess. Was that it? They thought he had to
He has sort of been favourite since he won the Irish Derby. Yeah, he's the dog to beat.
He hadn't been to Toaster. Yeah, I think there were a couple of other dogs jostling for favours when it first came out. But obviously now he's asserted himself, settled. And we are talking about the greatest greyhound of all time, I'd say. I'll be following his progress. I haven't got a financial interest now. I don't know what price is he now going into the finale. Nice.
11 to 10, even money.
11 to 10. Maybe the horse has bolted or the dog has bolted. I may get involved. I mean, you talk about other sports. I mean, the World Cup of Darts is coming up this weekend. Obviously, we're focused on the US Open, but the World Cup of Darts.
Yeah, but I know you've got a view. Who do you like?
Well, you've just got the greatest team that has ever been assembled in the World Cup of Darts. The Lukes are together for England.
Yeah.
I was discussing this with Wayne Mardell in Spain the other day, and he said, what price do you think they're going to be? I thought they'd be 1-4.
What a name drop, by the way.
We were chewing it over. I always like to get his name wrong because Phil Taylor always got his name wrong and that winds him up. So Wayne Mardell, I said, I think they'd be 1-4. I think you struggle to get 1-4. And in England, they've opened up at 1-2. You can get 1-2 England to win the World Cup of Darts. This is the greatest team that's ever been assembled. Luke Littler and Luke Humphreys. I think they'll win comfortably. You could even have an each way bet at 1-2 at half the odds. I know I like to encourage each way bets at short price. Yeah, the next best is the Welsh team. They can't play them to the final. Have an each way bet at 1-2. If you've got deep pockets, trust me, that's a good bet. You could have the Boccos England, you could have the Boccos England double on the side to help with fund your US Open bets, maybe. Good chat. They come here for the golf and they get,
off the top of your head, I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here, but do you know who the second favourites are for it?
For the World Cup of Darts?
Yeah,
Wales. Yeah, Wales. Gerwyn Price and Johnny Clayton. Maybe that'll be the final. But I just don't, Michael van Gerwen's not in the tournament. The Belgian side's quite interesting, but Dimitri Vandenberg's been carrying a few injuries. So there's no one that can beat this England dream team. So have that in your multi-sport whackers. Sorry, you came here for the US Open. You've got dogs and darts. It's the complete package on it.
We've gone after the good stuff. Right, give us a roundup then, Steve. It is the 2025 US Open. Who are the Steve Palmer picks?
I'll quickly give you a couple of US Open specials as well, because I know the sweet spot viewers enjoy them. Ludwig Aubert.
I was going to come on to that, so you've gone off piece, but okay, yeah.
Ludwig Aubert, top European. So I think Rory McIlroy is a terribly short price favourite in that. I think Rory McIlroy making the market in top European, and Ludwig Aubert is great value in that market. And then top Canadian, Taylor Pendriff, top Canadian. I think Taylor Pendriff should be favourite in that. Corey Connors getting a lot of respect in the market. It's a four-runner market. Pendriff, Connors, Nick Taylor, Mackenzie Hughes. I think it's a Taylor Pendriff, Corey Connors match. Pendriff the value. So they're two additional specials bets that you can have to go with your outright bets and to go with your dogs and darts bets.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask you about the output on Racing Post this week. Obviously, we'll have your preview in the paper on Wednesday. Golf-wise, extra previews on each round, two balls, three balls, specials, the whole lot, right? The whole shebang.
Absolutely, yeah. Thursday's paper will be jam-packed, Wednesday's paper jam-packed, and then online Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, we don't just give the outright tips and then run for the hills. We've got in-running action as well.
Marvellous. Right, now I'll have the roundup then. The US Open, who are we going with?
Boccos Diamond! Ludwig Aubert, Wackham Neiman, Patrick Cantlay, Harris English, Davis Riley.
And one more growl for the main pick, please.
Ludwig Aubert.
Steve, it's been an absolute pleasure. I wish you well this week. I think it's going to be a roller coaster for the players and us watching. There's going to be all sorts going on. That rough is going to prove absolute bedlam, a nightmare out there. So some lively scorecards coming off, fancy. Just a reminder, give us a prediction. Winning score?
I think 4 under par. I think Ludwig Aubert is going to get 4 under par, and that'll be the winning total. Yeah, anything under par has got a chance of winning this.
I want it to be 10 over the winning score. That's the kind of week that I'm looking for. Right, of course, you're here on the Racing Post YouTube channel. Do remember to like, comment and subscribe. Enjoy the golf this week. SBK have got loads for you to get stuck into. Free bets, boosted winnings, boosted picks from Steve. Gamble responsibly, and we'll see you next week.